episode, this one is the Jack Rose cocktail.
Manly.
It's got a name, so we feel good about it. Like, because, you know, remember the Barbara West? That was so informative, right? No, because that one, there was fucking nothing. Like, literally fucking nothing. So,
I'm still trying to figure out who Barbara West was.
Yeah, I know. But the Jack Rose, there is a story on this one. There is a Jack Rose. This is a famous Jack Rose. We're going to talk about whether this famous Jack Rose had anything to do with the cocktail. But the story itself is worth listening to. It's something I've never heard before. I'm sure many of you haven't either. And so this cocktail, we're going to plumb the depths of the New York underworld in 1919 to 1914, say, as part of this adventure. But to help take us there, I'd like to introduce our researcher, Mr. Jason Cruz.
Can I call be called Jack Rose, too?
Jack.
J-Rose.
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 I like it. J-Rose. Yeah. It's my new name.
J-Rose.
J-Rose Pharaohs.
That's all I've got. Yeah.
Mr. Bone Doctor Layman. So.
The Jack Rose.
The Jack Rose cocktail. Now, looking at the picture, it is a vibrant, beautiful little cocktail.
It is very pink.
But, I'm assuming.
Like liquid watermelon.
Yeah, it really does. Huh. It's like a Jolly Rancher in liquid form. I'm assuming that it's all about the grenadine, because otherwise it's just like lime juice and applejack. I'm like, what in that is red? Grenadine. But the times we've done grenadine cocktails before, it's never quite turned everything like red, like the pictures do.
No, that looks like a dive of food coloring right there.
Yeah.
It is weird. I mean, it is such a vibrant pink, and it actually isn't that much grenadine.
Yeah, two or more dashes.
Which is weird. So you have as you said, it's applejack, the juice of half a lime or half a lemon, and then the grenadine. And I don't know if something happens with the juice of the lime and the lemon that takes the grenadine and makes it. I don't know. Is that physics? What is that? Chemistry?
Well, remember, it explodes it. It's like blowing up a heart.
That's the scientific. Yes. It explodes the grenadine. I know mixologists, that's how they talk. They're like, did you explode the grenadine?
That's right.
That's right. Then you did it wrong.
You did it absolutely wrong.
That's why the Golden Dawn was so popular. Right. Because it had exploded grenadine.
Exploded grenadine. It is. I actually looked into this, and then later on I looked at the picture and I was like, holy shit, that's very pink. I couldn't figure it out either. I don't know.
I'm assuming that when we drink it, when we go to the bar, it's going to look kind of brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like fucking every drink in this book.
There's got to be something else in it that makes it that pink. But who knows? Maybe the color of the applejack, the lime, maybe it creates some weird chemical reaction.
These pictures are lying to me.
Everything's brown. I'm sorry. It's just brown. All of it.
Maybe there will be bubbling and fumes. We could only hope.
Well, frapping. You can frap it.
Frap it.
So.
I'm sorry, I'm married. I won't be doing that anytime soon.
Frapping the grandma.
Those were the good old days, weren't they? In the catacombs.
Gross. So they make, you can make it with half a lime or half a lemon, and Hank says you can make it with either one, but that the lime shows up first. So when I started looking into it, are you still thinking about frapping?
I'm here. The lime's here. It's funny.
Oh,
it's
lime's
funny to me.
Always
it's
early.
So bad. I'm going to the pun fest after this. Sorry. I can't help it. I got old dad jokes.
Old dad.
That's all that's coming out from over here.
But the earliest recipe I could find for the Jack Rose is in Cocktail Boothby's The World's Drinks and How to Mix Them, the 1908 edition. And he lists lemon as the ingredient, not lime. Mm. So Hague's wrong. I just like saying that. He's wrong. So he calls for lemon instead of lime. And so it looks like the lemon came first. But what Haig points out is that you can, he's tried different, either one, and both work well, so you could really use either one. David Wondrich's book, Imbibe, updated and revised edition from Absinthe Cocktail to Whiskey Smash. He talks about this, that the Boothby recipe is kind of the first place it shows up in print. What's interesting is that he credits somebody, Boothby credits someone named R.H. Towns. He even gives his address, which is fucking weird, right? It says, Jack Rose Cocktail, a la R.H. Towns, 62 William Street, New York. I was like, dude, why is it like poison?
It's like a and when fucking banging on a bathroom stall.
For a Go good time, call R.H. Towns.
Back then, stocking was a
it was a first date. Stocking was a first date. Yeah.
So he credits a guy. So I was like, awesome. He gave me a name. I can track this down.
Yeah.
Who's R.H. Towns? I couldn't find shit on this guy. I was in genealogy research resources looking at census records. I couldn't find his first name. I couldn't find his middle
name.
Town
with an E?
T-O-W-N-E-S.
Wow.
And there were people in New York at the time named Towns. Now, Wondrich says that he was a bartender. I'm just going to assume he was a bartender. I think his name was Bill Boothby. We'll call him Cocktail. Oh, yeah.
Bill Boothby. Yeah, he was
Cocktail Bill. And he just gave him the recipe. I wanted to see if I could find anything about this guy because it might give an indication of why the hell did he call it a Jack Rose.
Yeah.
This is actually a pretty popular drink. I found it kind of almost everywhere. Straub's Manual had
really?
It. Jack's Manual in 1916. Robert Vermeer. Now, this is where Haig's kind of right. The bartenders did take sort of a liberty. Some used lemon, some used lime.
What's the first instance?
Lemon.
No, what's the date?
Oh, 1908 is the first time it appears in print.
Okay.
But after that, everybody does a little bit differently. And this goes on through Prohibition, after Prohibition, it shows up. It's a surprisingly well-referenced cocktail. I also just looking through newspapers and, you know, other kind of periodicals from the early 20th century, it's named. And when it's named alongside the Manhattan, the Sidecar, the Tom Collins, Mint Julep.
Wow.
So it made it seem like it was at a level of, you know, that it's... At least it was a household name in that realm where it was like, yeah, everybody knows a Jack Rose. So, I mean, I don't know why you would list it with the other ones. And even through Prohibition, I found an article where it was titled, Ship's Bartender Finds Americans Blind to Rules. I was like, that's pretty much
ever.
Yeah.
Privateers.
The beginning of America till now. Americans are blind to rules. It says, keeps them busy 18 hours a day in a rush to sample all known drinks. So it sounded like a ship's bartender on some ocean liner. And just fucking made cocktails all day.
Wow.
And so it said, they wanted clover clubs and orange blossoms, gin fizzes and Rickies, mint juleps and Jack Rose, and Tom Collins, and with no regard for number... Or order or harmony. I was like, okay. And then it was like, daiquiris. Like,
what?
Dude, it was just like, what is happening?
Is the party ship?
1927. Prohibition's going on. They're in international waters. So they were like, we're going to have all the cocktails.
Everything.
Give us everything you have.
It's the arc of cocktails.
But it was named. It was named with fizzes and Rickies. I mean, that's...
Wow.
That's when you hit the big time when you're named with a Ricky. So one of the things that Haig mentions is that the drink has a real vagueness about the origin of the name. And he provides three theories. One, it's made with Applejack, and it's rose color. I was like, that sounds stupid. The other one is the corruption of the name for the Jacques Minot Rose, which is also called the Jack Rose. Or it's named after a mafia hitman.
Wait, what the hell was... What was that second one?
The Jacques Minot Rose.
Okay. Oh, that's a flower.
It's a flower. It's a natural flower, but they call it the Jack Rose. I think over time it became the Jacques Minot, the Jacques Rose, and then it's America, so they were like, just call it Jack.
Jack.
The Jack Rose.
Frenchie.
So, everything I looked up, they were like, it's called the Jack. You know,
that's
people call it the
American.
Jack Rose. I know, totally. We're calling your flowers Jack. What do you say about that? Yeah.
On the porch with the shotgun.
Right. The third story is that it's named after a mafia hitman. The general impression after reading those was that the Applejack theory, the Applejack and the rose color theory, I was like, that's lazy. That sounds wrong. That can't possibly be it. The other two kind of seemed plausible. I was like, well, if there's a Jack Rose there's flower, why not? I mean, if it's, you know, the color of the drink kind of looks like the flower, why not? Mafia hitman? Please.
Yeah, right.
The mafia
right.
hitman. So I started looking into that, those theories. You know, I can't really say much about the Applejack and the rose color. The picture we have is, as we've been discussing, it's awfully vibrant.
It's violently red.
Like, you know, kind of pinkish. It sounds bullshit theory, but the more I started to consider it, I thought, why not? I mean, like, if you are a bartender, you make a drink and you go, holy shit, that looks just like, you know, a Jack Rose or Jacques Minot Rose. It's the same color.
Yeah.
The second one with the Jacques Minot Rose, it was actually originally called the General Jacques Minot Rose. It was named after General Jean-François Jacques Minot, who was a French general during the Napoleonic Wars. And they said that it's well known as a dark red rose, but that some of the varieties are kind of a very shocking pink color. You know, I thought, well, it's dark red, and no, that's definitely not, that's not dark red, and grenadine mixed with anything is not going to get you a dark red color. It's just going to be brown. But it's sort of a rose color, and not the flower rose, but like the pinkish rose.
Oh, okay.
When I looked at the picture, I was like, that kind of makes sense too. So those two kind of seem.
I mean, that looks like what's the Hawaiian punch? It looks like Hawaiian punch. They got the picture.
Wouldn't
of.
That be funny if it was just a glass of Hawaiian punch?
We don't have any of these ingredients.
It's Applejack and Hawaiian punch. Somebody's drinking that, by the way. I'm going to drink that.
That sounds
later.
Pretty fucking delicious, actually.
Like
show canceled.
Punch.
Let's go.
How?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what That's was that Kool-Aid. Guy's name? Let's name it after that guy, the Hawaiian Punch guy.
The Kool-Aid Man?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that was the Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah.
But the Hawaiian Punch guy would beat your ass, though.
I think his name was Punchy.
Punchy, I think. You're right. Yeah. The Punchy Rose.
How original.
Yeah.
How thoughtful. Punchy.
I think any it's not even a cocktail, but I feel like any alcohol mixed with Hawaiian punch to me means high school.
Yeah.
That's just like,
oh, it's a perfect
cover. I don't
cover.
Like alcohol.
Yeah.
Put Hawaiian punch in it.
Yeah. Red bug juice.
It's cocktail.
Yeah.
So these two ideas, the color, the flower, I was like, you know, both of those make kind of, you know, make plausible sense. And the two, you know, you kind of can't distinguish one from the other. I mean, if it's named after the rose, you're probably because of the color.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't just be like, I love Jack Roses, so I'm going to name it this. I mean, I guess you could, but then I found in a book, Old Waldorf Bar Days from 1931, the author Albert Stevens Crockett talks about actually all three theories, but he says the name is really Jacques Rose, a corruption of Giacomo, which is not the name. But I was like, Giacomo. It was named because of its pink color, the exact shade of a Giacomo rose when properly concocted. Now, he gives the exact recipe, but he says to frap it.
The frap is back.
The frap. He was into the frap.
He was to frap it, bro.
So he.
Don't you tell me to frap it.
So he kind of conflates the two theories about the color and sort of says it's named after the color of the rose. So there you sort of see how those two theories could be one theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
it's, okay.
It comes from the same place. I really wanted it to be the mafia hitman. So I was like, well, who's this dude? Who's Jack Rose? And
yeah.
Come across a man named Baldy Jack Rose.
Yeah, Jack Rose. Yeah, I did my reading on Jack Rose because mafia hitman, I wanted to know more about that, and I really wished it was about him. The funny thing is that, like some of the cocktails we've done, I bet that now it is associated with him even if maybe it wasn't originally, because
because you want it to be.
Well,
we want it to be.
Well, yeah, and well, and also, I can tell you at the time, I bet this guy was far more popular than a French flower.
Yeah, totally.
So,
or the color pink.
Whoa, man.
Whoa.
If you're passing up the color pink, you are way popular.
So Jack Rose was originally Jacob Rosenzweig. He was born in 1876 from Polish immigrants. Through his life, he obtained the name Ball Jack, Billiard Ball, Cue Ball, and that's because he was completely hairless. He had alopecia.
Oh, wow.
So he had no hair on
eyebrows
his...
Eyebrows is the worst. Yeah. That's what gets you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he...
You can wear hats.
So, yeah. So wear this guy looked like a villain from Dick Tracy.
Right.
You know, right? You know?
He was made for it.
And exactly. He was given a name like he was in Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
It's Cue Ball, everybody! when he was growing up, basically, he was running around the city. He grew up in New York, causing trouble, ended up in reform school, where he learned how to run a con and how to gamble and how to do all those things. Went back out into the city, found trouble there, but he left quickly and went to Connecticut, where he used his skills. He was able to actually entrench himself a little bit more, run a baseball team, run gambling houses, run gambling games and stuff. Made quite a bit of money in Connecticut before people realized, wait a minute, this guy was from New York and was a troublemaker. Get out! And so he was chased out of Connecticut.
Wow.
Went back to New York, where people would embrace his kind. Met his wife, who was a prostitute.
Say, like, Kate No Teeth or something?
No, apparently she was quite a looker. He stayed with this woman, and it was interesting because... So she was a prostitute. One of her Johns got her pregnant, and he ended up paying her monthly child support of $200.
Wow.
Which was a lot of money back in those days.
Hiding something.
Yeah.
And Jack was basically helping her with her business in a way. He took half the cut, but also during the day he was doing other things.
At night he was a pimp?
Yeah, he was kind of the guard. And
Jack Pimp
and Rose. It was kind of a nice a little arrangement for him.
Could you imagine that? You know, like, I saw a picture of him. He didn't look very big or menacing, but he was completely hairless.
Yeah.
And you gotta figure at the time, you'd be like, what the fuck am I seeing?
Yeah.
Like, this guy is like a mutant. Yeah. I
mean, not what's he gonna do?
You're like, now you'd just be like, oh, poor guy.
For
has
sure.
Cancer.
He crawled out of fucking from under a bridge or something.
Like, dude, look at, did you see that guy? He's like an alien.
Yeah. And then he knows how to con you. I'm sure he probably used it to his advantage.
Yeah, and he was probably kind of tough.
It's like, I can't read his face. He has no eyebrows. I don't know. What's
he happy? Is he sad? Is he gonna kill me?
Yes.
Yes.
All of those.
Okay, so the story, there's another guy who's really important to the story. This guy was, his name was Herman Rosenthal, grew up around the same time, same circumstances, running in the streets of New York.
Except he was overly hairy.
No. Well, maybe, they don't discuss that. However,
he had extreme back hair.
He was very short, and he earned the name Little Herman.
That's not really a good
name. Well, it worked in
that's
connection
how
with
mean he was.
He apparently was kind of like, you know, Joe Pesci, you know, kind of a
pass.
Oh, it's like Hinky Dink Kenna.
Yeah,
like people didn't fuck with him. He's a little guy, because you always think like, well, little guys they probably give the name like Big Man or something, but like, you know, when they have diminutive names,
right?
Like. Oh,
go ahead and call him that to his face.
They're the scariest.
Yeah. Go well, call him Little Herman to his face.
And right. Also, and also like really volatile, too. You know?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Holy shit. You know, I just complimented his shoes and he's punching me in the face.
I just got a throat punch.
So he ended up a little bit better off than Jack. He ended up working for one of the city's major politicians and wise guys. His name was Big Tim Sullivan. And he had his own clubs, his own establishments on the Lower East Side. Yes, he was a big man. He was the political boss of the Lower East Side.
Wow.
and he started Herman off by taking bets and running numbers and stuff for his establishments. And so, like, all of this is totally under...
Internship.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much it.
See, do you know how much history would change if you just said,
yeah,
oh, this guy wasn't a criminal. He was doing an internship running numbers.
Right.
And whacking people.
Yeah.
Oh, he wasn't at that level yet.
No, okay.
Learning to whack.
So, in the early 1900s, and this just goes to show that it apparently is a very successful kind of thing, or something we should do, he got married and pimped his wife out as a prostitute.
Holy shit.
And he hung out at home with her, taking half the cut, and...
They went through the whole marriage thing?
Oh, yeah. They were married, and so...
He sounds like a stand-up guy.
Sense of honor was so much different back
Jack
then.
Jack Rose did the same damn thing,
wow.
Right? You know, so this seems to be a...
We're getting to see behind the curtain on the henchmen, like what...
Maybe we
was.
Should rethink our... No.
Honey, if you're listening.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I like being married.
It worked out differently in his marriage because she eventually ditched him. And
he, oh, really?
Yeah. Well, Jack Rose, it worked for them, for Jack Rose and his wife.
Forever, so like, they didn't break up?
No, they stayed together through thick and thin. So, like...
Yeah, shocking that you would meet... I met somebody else. How? Which one of the 90 guys that you banged was...
Little Herman goes back to Big Tim, says, please give me a job back. So he starts working for Big Tim Sullivan again in the club. He rises through the ranks, becomes the club manager, and he gets to a point where he's making enough to live in the Broadway Hotel for $1,200 a month.
That's like a Chicago apartment. Now
I know. Yeah, that's crazy. I know. That's an insane amount of money really that he's making for 1900s, early 1900s.
And
money.
You gotta imagine he probably wasn't taking much space, so maybe he was. Yeah. I mean, imagine what the other rooms cost.
Yeah.
Eventually, he pissed off the police because, as the manager, he was approached.
Because they don't like. Criminals.
Well, no. He was invited to the police station, and the chief of police for the Lower East Side said, hey, we know about your establishment, and maybe you should pay us some money. And he said, no, fuck you! And that's because that's who he was.
Whoops.
Anybody who said shit to him, he just popped off. And so...
He was Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
And so the club got shut down.
Whoops.
By this time, Big Tim had gotten older, and he was more in Tammany Hall, running things.
Doing things the legal
more
way.
Of, yeah, yeah. More of an adult, enjoying all of his investments that were pumping money into his accounts constantly. But Rosenthal goes back to him and says, please, I trashed your investment, your club, but please give me money so I can open my own club. And he does. He gives him money, and he goes.
Big Tim Sullivan sounds like a fucking idiot.
Well, he just keeps.
Oh,
okay.
Okay, so he gives him money to open up a new club in a region called the Tenderloin District. This place was also a place where there are lots of criminals, but it was also more high class, bigger spenders, higher rollers. And it also happened that Jack Rose and a couple other guys, Bridgie Weber and Beansy Rosenfeld.
That's a great name.
Yeah.
I gotta say, the people at the time were all about the nicknames. Everybody had a nickname.
That's what I found when reading
the
story.
And it was like, I'm reading about the Levy District in Chicago. Everybody had a fucking nickname. Mm-hmm. It was like Hot Stove Jimmy and, you know, this... You know, Jimmy the Kid and Johnny DePau and Johnny Meatball. I mean, everybody was like,
wow.
Did you just like if you got into politics or the underground, they were like, your new name.
Yeah. It's a ceremony.
Right.
He has feet. It's
Jimmy with the feet.
Jimmy with the feet.
Bobby Two Eyes.
Yeah.
Jimmy Two Times.
He's got a nose. It's Jimmy Nose.
Jimmy Nose. That would be a funny graphic novel where the answer names are just ridiculous.
Joey Two Ears. Yeah. All right, God, look at this fucking guy. He's got two ears. He's got two ears. It's funny.
Rosenthal ends up in the Tenderloin District, where there are all these other guys already operating. They know Rosenthal as well, and they all think he's the biggest asshole in the world. They all
he sounds hate like the biggest
his
asshole.
Fucking guts.
He does sound
and like so, him. Like, so now they're competing with this guy who's constantly bankrolled by one of the major players in the city. And they're like, oh,
busted.
This is great. Now we're going to bring in a third player, Charles Becker, who was this large German guy who was a lieutenant in the police force. And his beat was the Tenderloin District. He had three wives through the course of his life. The first two, he was constantly with prostitutes.
This tale is filled with prostitutes. I mean, like,
yeah,
more than any cocktail we've ever done.
In 1911, he's given a new task force called the Special Squad. But
Every time I hear something like that, I'm like, my God, that's like
squad,
fucking Hitler.
Yeah,
like,
squad
like,
is the worst. Like, I was thinking the short bus squad, but you know.
Everybody, no, I automatically think of like the worst, because they had something in London called the B Specials. And that
is that
was
an
like,
acapella group?
They might now.
Do-wop.
But yeah, they were like the worst of the worst. They would like go and crack skulls, basically.
Yeah. Right after a funny little song.
Yeah.
But you like that, did ya?
Okay, so...
So, nice guy.
Yeah, he was...
Grade A cop.
So far, everybody you've talked about sounds like I'd want him in my neighborhood.
He's... So, the Special Squad...
Wait, are you reading a script from Dick Tracy?
Maybe I am. Okay, so here's the thing. He was in control of the Tenderloin District. That was his beat... His squad, his special squad, became known as the Strong Arm Squad.
Fun.
And what they would do...
Told you, Nazis.
Yeah. Well, what they would do is he'd, you know, go to all these establishments with illegal gambling, and he'd say, hey, you need to, if you pay me money, then maybe you won't be arrested, and all of your games and tables and stuff won't get chopped with an axe. Usually what would happen... is he would have to make examples of people. And even if you paid, what the benefit of payment was, because he was a cop and he had to show some activity.
Sure. You didn't be like,
write somebody
dude,
up.
I'm doing my job. No, but nothing's being shut down.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how good I'm doing it.
Yeah, there's
no problems here.
There's nothing illegal.
Yeah. No. So what he would do is he would tell the owners of the clubs, he'd say, hey, we're going to come in such and such a date at such and such a time, you know, move in some crappy tables, you know, and we'll just go in and chop them up and everything will be cool. You won't lose any money. We'll pay for the door when we bust it down.
Is this how Broadway got started?
Yes.
It was just a show?
It was just a show.
Were they singing when they did it?
I hope so.
Toorallo. No, it's German. It's German, sorry. It was rigged, big time.
Oh yeah, totally. He was totally managing all of the legal operations in the district. And
but that's you got to figure all these club owners. It's the price of doing business.
That's
They're well versed in this. They're like
and like the same
we
thing.
Do it, whatever.
The
like,
same thing happened to Rosenthal in the Lower East Side.
Sure.
You know, so it seems to be something that all the police did just normally.
Huh.
So by 1912, Becker was making $10,000 per month.
Jesus Christ.
How is he not the boss then? Like the mob boss?
Well, I mean...
He's a cop.
Yeah, and he's
crazy.
He
doesn't
just
need to be the boss.
And he's
boss.
And you think about it, he's just really shaving off the top from all these different places.
A
little bit, so
yeah.
He's getting just tons of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems to be working out well for everybody. And then Rosenthal comes. Now, they had a relationship before, and he kind of likes Rosenthal. They get along really well.
They're both psychos.
And
yeah,
and
I mean,
Rosenthal,
like.
You know, basically, he gets kind of a free ride. You know, so he doesn't get as much attention. He's not asked to have his stuff chopped up and everything.
Oh, wow.
He never gets raided. And eventually, Becker is challenged on this by his boss and says, hey, people are complaining because you have this thing with Rosenthal. And so
you
maybe...
You have to equally beat people up.
That's right. That's right.
If you're going to rig shit, you better do it equally.
And so he goes to Rosenthal and says, hey, I have to do this now. So I'm going to tell you when I'm going to do it.
It's just like...
No one tells Little Herman
and
what to do.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens. Herman says... tells him to go take a shit in his hat.
That's probably exactly what he said, too. Let's get in the DeLorean. I want to eat it.
Hey, go take a shit in your head, you fucker.
Take a shit in your head, see?
Here's what you're going to do.
Little Herman, see? Oh, man.
Oh, that's exactly what happened in my imagination.
We are rewriting
I don't care if it happened
tonight.
Anywhere just, else. That's yeah. exactly what happened.
Okay, so...
Well, everyone in the 20s...
talks like that.
That's in my imagination.
With the nasal...
Women,
yeah.
children,
it was all
everyone.
James Cagney.
Yeah,
everybody
exactly.
was James Cagney. Women,
and there was no babies. Color either. It was all black and white. Even when I see it in my mind, it's all sepia tone.
Rosenthal freaks out. He's like, no, you're not going to do this to me. And, you know, so he ignores Becker. You know, he's just kind of like... Yeah, if it happens, you're going to be in trouble. But Becker still has to do it. So he goes in and busts up his good equipment and everything. Oh. And a bunch of people are there who get arrested who are good clients and stuff. It's a big kind of fiasco. This is all because Rosenthal wouldn't play. Like,
I mean,
everybody else.
Everything
does.
You're
One
saying
asshole
is crazy. It yeah. is like Joe Pesci and Goodfellas.
Yeah. yeah. Like, that's who I saw when yeah. I was reading this.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking say yeah. And like,
no, you're not going to do this to me.
Not to me.
Yeah. Not to me, yeah. Oh my God. And so after that happens, he decides to go to the authorities. He goes to the mayor, and the mayor ignores him. He goes to the city district attorney, Charles C. Whitman. Apparently, he was just drunk all the time.
Shock.
He did his job intoxicated.
Little Herman or Charles?
The attorney?
The district attorney.
Was drunk all the time?
Yes.
I mean, that's how you get through it.
Yeah, exactly.
What was going on?
And so he doesn't care. He's like, yeah, whatever. Give me some proof from other people, and yeah.
How like, much booze do you have on you?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So instead, he goes to the press. He goes to the New York World and talks to Herbert Bayard Swope.
Who has the greatest name ever in the history of people.
And apparently not a nickname.
Bayard?
It's not even a nickname.
Yeah, no, that's his
Wait,
real name.
Wait, Swope's not a nickname?
Yo, Swope. So he tells Swope about what Becker's doing and all of the corruption in the police department. And he's like, oh, really? And he's, you know, taking notes. And then he goes to the district attorney and says, hey, I've got a story and I'm going to bust it wide open. I'm going to bust it wide open.
There you go. You can't be helped.
That's right. You have to talk that way.
It feels right.
And, I'm going to bust it wide open. See?
crack it like a walnut.
I'm going to the hammer. See?
So Whitman takes him seriously because now it's going to the press. And so... they arrange a meeting with the police department, Becker, police department's legal guy, and now it's a public thing. Or it's not really public, but
it can't be ignored.
There are more people involved.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know that, like, everybody with chief police, all these people are like, this fucking guy.
Why?
Yeah. Why am I being dragged in this shit? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, you had one job.
Right?
Just keep me out of it. Yeah. I don't care what you're doing. And you, like, the chief police is like, well, now I gotta fucking do something.
Yeah,
thanks
now I gotta do my job, fucker.
Asshole.
And they probably still use the name Little Herman for making you do some shit you don't want to do. Because
you're a
fucker.
Herman.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a stool pigeon and then there's
a Little Herman.
Quit being a Little Herman.
You're such a Little Herman.
That's a horrible...
Okay, after these meetings, Becker basically confronts Rosenthal and says, stop it, or you're going to pay the price. Rosenthal's not hearing anything. Right. He's just so cranked up on being put out that, you know, he doesn't listen. So here's another thing. Swope One of his best friends is this guy by the name of Arnold Rothstein. He has two nicknames, the King of the Tenderloin and the Brain.
Just, those are great.
Yeah.
Those are great.
Arnold Rothstein.
I choose my new nickname as King of the
so
Tenderloin.
So he's friends with this guy, with this reporter from the newspaper. And so this reporter, I mean, they were in each other's weddings and stuff. It's wow. That kind of friendship. And so this reporter tells Rothstein about this situation that's happening, and Rothstein's like, oh, really? Okay, fuck. And so he goes to Rosenthal and says, I'll give you $500 now if you leave town and never come back. And Rosenthal just totally ignores him, just whatever. around this time, we see Jack Rose again. Jack Rose and his buds, they're all doing business in the Tenderloin. They're seeing what's happening. Around this time, he goes to the gang leader of the Lenox Street gang. And this guy's name is Big Jack Zelig. And he's known as the toughest guy in New York.
That just sounds scary.
How do you get the title of toughest guy in New York? That's what I'm saying. You must be the toughest guy
in New York. He's not even 30 yet. When Jack Rose goes and sees him.
He eats babies.
He must. Yeah.
And like, I think and that's shits a grenades.
Right. Right.
Like, oh, Jack said, oh my God.
Dude, so he goes to
that, I'm scared. And the guy's dead.
So he goes to,
he's under this table.
Yeah. He goes to Zelig and says, Becker told me to hire some of your boys to, kill Rosenthal.
Little Hermit's gotta come up.
He says that there's gonna be protection for anybody who does it, so, you know, are you interested? Zelig says, no, I kinda like Rosenthal. But four
it's
guys
the psycho's code, man.
But four guys in his group over here and say, hey,
really?
we want some
we'll
of that.
Take care
action.
Of it. Huh?
Yeah. So
yeah, we don't like Rosenthal.
Yeah. Well,
he's fucking shit up.
They heard heard what the offer was.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, whatever, it's just another guy.
Right.
So,
yeah, but
he's
it
a pain in the ass anyway.
Now we go to midnight at the Hotel Metropole. Little Herman is hanging out with his friends Fat Mo Brown and Boob Walker.
I'm not taking that name. That's a nickname that you get because like people give it to you and you're like, I don't want to be Boob. And they're like, you're Boob. And you're like, can I be like Mr. Tufts? And you're like, no, you're Boob. Fuck,
I'm Boob.
Okay, so he's hanging out at this cafe. They're having drinks and stuff. And around 1:30, this is what people say. The police cleared the street in front of the cafe.
That's always a good sign.
Jesus Christ. That's when you everybody looks at you and go, what's that? What's going on?
Yeah. They're going to explode him.
Just like the grenadine.
Just like the grenadine.
That's right.
Frap the shit out of this guy.
Frap him good. I'm going to frap you, see?
Okay. Bridgie Weber walks in.
Bridgie Weber.
You're not making this shit up,
no,
right?
That's his name. That's what he was known as.
It was
as.
Like real movies was life. movies were life then. Bridgie? He lived under a bridge, right?
He looked like a troll.
His other nickname was Trolley the Brain.
Oh, jeez.
How do you, like, I mean, like, what was happening at the time where
everybody was
had to have a nickname?
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't just be like, my name's Sam. And you're like, no, it's
no,
not.
No, it's not.
It's not Boob.
Well, Bridgie Weber walks in, tells Rosenthal that somebody wants to talk to him outside. And Rosenthal goes
the old shit.
The old days. Somebody
nope.
Wants to talk
well,
to you.
Rosenthal was actually expecting somebody.
Oh, okay.
And he was expecting a payoff of some kind. Nobody knows what, but he was talking about it because he's a dumbass.
Yeah.
And
obviously,
so at about 1:50, he's outside, and the four guys from the Lenox Street gang, Harry Horowitz, who also went by the name Jip the Blood, Frank Mueller, who went by the name Whitey Lewis.
seems random. Your name's Frank Mueller. Okay, your Frank new name Mueller is Whitey Lewis. So much
better, right? Stick with what you got.
Well, if you're not going to get some cool nickname, right. Just be like,
change it for some. We've got two more guys left. Louis Rosenberg, who went by Lefty.
Good.
That's a good
one. I'll take that one.
And Frank Sirofici, who went by the name Dago Frank.
You know what's interesting is that, like, they're reading about this and reading about other things. That was so many nicknames. Like,
Dago?
People would say
what their ethnicity.
Dago or Jew Kid. Yeah. They would always say, and wow. It would be like 10 guys. You'd be like, you couldn't think that there was nothing else about that. You were like, well, he's
Jew Kid number two.
Right. You're like, he's Jewish. You're like, four. Yeah, but like, he's also like, maybe he's got a weird tattoo. Right. Yeah, like, yeah. He could have a different nickname, but like.
That's the only thing important.
And yeah, like, how do you, right. And how do you distinguish between.
He doesn't believe in Christ. That's important to me.
Right. Right. How else am I going to tell him apart from everybody else? Yeah. Okay. Oh, no, I don't get kids
so, that nickname. So, Rosenthal's outside. These four guys swarm him, shoot him 5 times. All of them were deadly shots.
Did they have Tommy guns? He was just basically dead.
No, they were just regular handguns. And then they run off. They get into the getaway car, and it's big news. Suddenly, you know, 2 a.m., people are gathering, and they even get Whitman up, who's, like, drunk off his ass, because he even drinks at night. Imagine that.
Yeah. He drinks more.
He's like, I'm off the clock.
He doesn't have shit
now.
To do. So he doesn't have to be as drunk.
Yeah, in the morning it's taking the edge off. At night it's yeah. Yeah.
Now Becker is the prime suspect. And so when he...
Because nobody shuts their yeah. mouth. They're all talking about the shit in Omen. There's like, I had a beef with Rosenthal. See?
50 people can say the
okay. exact
conversation. I heard this conversation the other day.
Now, get this. Not long after all of this happens, it's like a day or two, Jack Rose walks into the police station. He says that he's the one who hired the hitmen at Becker's request.
Wow, and I read that and I was like, I don't understand. So, because it's not like anybody was looking.
No.
It didn't seem like anybody was like, you but, know, I think Jack Rose is involved with this somehow. Yeah. It kind of just seemed like I gotta go.
But he, you know, so like this is the biggest lead, and it was something. I mean, they already had Becker. They were like, you know, don't leave town kind of thing. And
they had Becker because he was sitting at the other desk. They're like, don't move.
We're watching you.
We know where you are.
So Rose comes in and he says that Becker hired him to hire the hit, and that because Becker is the guy in the Tenderloin and he's wheezing everybody for money, he was basically going to shut down all these people if they didn't help in this situation.
And it sounds like the chief was at least kind of aware of what was going on. Didn't want to like, well, tell me all the details. I know what you're doing. Just fucking take care of whatever.
Yeah.
But now police corruption is becoming a thing, and it's enough for, you know, Swope to be interested in writing an article and everything. You know, this is now the big news.
Oh,
I believe it now. But Jack must have just felt unappreciated, it seems. His wife was not paying attention to him because he was pimping her.
Oh, well, no, actually, it sounds like they actually worked in concert together.
So it's just a complete left turn for him to show up and just be like, it was me.
That's what seemed weird about the story. I was like, I must be missing something. Like, did they lean on him? Did somebody come into me? He was like, oh, I got like freaked out. It just
wasn't
like,
even connected to the dudes. Like, didn't he just have his own operation?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it's odd. Yeah,
but he was having to pay Becker the whole time.
Oh, right, but he wasn't Becker even down. Like, he wasn't a hit.
Well, no. It was basically Becker was a problem for all of the Tenderloin operators.
So maybe that was it. I mean,
so not long after this happens, Zelig walks in. They've apprehended Becker. He's in jail now. They've apprehended the four hitmen. They're all in jail. The trial's going to start. Zelig walks in and says he's got information that will change the way things go. And he says that, you know, he thought Rosenthal was a stand-up guy, and that, you know, he would want to see the person who did it have their legs broken. Literally, like, a day after, I think, this guy, Red Phil Davidson, who was this gambling... He was a gambling junkie, never had money to his name at all, walks up behind him in a train, shoots him in the back of the head.
Who, Zelig or the...
He shoots Zoe Jack in the back of the head.
Really?
Yeah.
The toughest dude, and he just takes him out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's how what is his name?
And he,
Wild Bill Hickok got shot. It was like, it wasn't like a famous gunfight.
No,
that's some dude.
Yeah. Douche. And but here's the thing: he was carrying a police revolver. So
keep your mouth shut, see? Yeah.
You're not tough anymore, see?
That's right. So now we go onto the trial, and Becker is. Well, first of all, the four hitmen, they're put on trial, and they're quickly determined guilty, and they're on death row. They'll be killed pretty soon. Becker is also put on trial for having authorized the hit. It's a complete railroading. The judge is doing everything to shut down the defense.
It makes... This whole time period, everything I've read about, you're like, what was going on? Nobody was
there. Was
good. There was no good people.
I know, really. It's like there is. Everybody's got an agenda. Everybody's got an angle. Everybody's getting paid.
And not even that much. Sometimes it was like, "We do this for $10." Sure.
Sure. Why not?
I don't care what.
As the trial was wrapping up, it even went so far as the defense attorney. It was time for him to give his speech. He was this fat, unhealthy guy. The courtroom.
Johnny Heart Attack.
Yeah, Johnny. The judge has all of the windows, before he gives his speech, the judge has all of the windows closed. It's an incredibly hot day. The room is extremely stuffy. This guy stands up and starts giving his speech.
So he's trying to kill him?
And he's like, he's about ready, and he asks for a suspension. He's like, no, you have to finish. And the defense attorney passes out on the floor, and the judge says, well, that's it. There's
guilty.
There's no... You know, he's not allowed to finish the defense. He's not... The jury goes off, and they deliberate for 3 seconds and come back.
This is real.
This is absolutely real.
And Johnny Two Sandwiches is found in contempt of court.
And like, possibly not breathing.
Right? What the fuck is happening?
That's good justice right there. Jesus, I thought Judge Judy was hardcore. It's some real shit.
Jesus Christ. Turn up the heat.
Then they're like, okay, well, you know, this was incredibly terrible. You know, they're talking to Becker. They're like, this was a totally unfair trial. You're going to get freed on the appeal.
Yeah, okay.
So they do the appeal. Same shit happens. Basically, he's railroaded, and he gets the death sentence, and is eventually executed.
Becker is
executed. Becker.
But, I mean...
For the murder of Herman Rosenthal.
He was wrong. He did it, though, right?
No.
Who
he did not. He had nothing to do with the murder.
Right.
Of
he didn't put the hit. Okay, that's right. But he was still a bad dude.
Yeah, but he didn't murder anybody. That was entirely...
That the papers know of.
That was... This whole thing... was orchestrated by Jack Rose. He was the one who went and told Zelig that Becker wanted the hit. But Becker didn't ask anything of Jack Rose.
Damn, dude.
Jack Rose and his friends all decided, hey, there's a conflict between Rosenthal and Becker. We have an opportunity. We're going to take out Rosenthal, and then we're going to finger Becker for it, and then he's going to go down and... will no longer have...
Man. Fuck with the mole man. That Jack Rose is scary, dude.
Right, because it's always the dude with no hair.
I'm sorry, I cannot fucking trust... I'm sorry all y'all out there.
The dude with fucking, no eyebrows?
Yeah.
That's the guy you gotta watch out for.
Draw eyebrows on yourself, or I'm not trusting you.
But I mean, that
so
that's kind of ingenious, though.
Yeah.
Take everybody out. Oh, they'll
and
take
apparently,
themselves out.
Like, really? When he went on the stand, when Jack Rose went on the stand, he was crying. He was such the con. And he told all of his friends, I'll do all of this. Give me the money to manage it, and I'll take I'll take care of the con. Wow. And he did.
And that was the weirdest part, because it wasn't like he just came and was like, I was involved. He was like, I hired the getaway car. I hired all the hitmen. I'm sorry. My bad.
It's not my fault. I had to, because...
It was Becker told me.
Because Becker was gonna, like, he was gonna kill me. He was gonna squeeze me. He was gonna take all of us down if we didn't comply.
Straight up rat mole. He was just...
He was known as the squealer.
The squealer.
But here's the thing.
But he wasn't really a squealer, because...
He made it up.
He entirely made it up.
He's the only one who to name himself, basically.
He was really the only bad guy.
What's weird about it is
that... In the sense of
killing Roosevelt. I feel like I'm watching Batman.
Right, it was Batman.
This is nuts.
Jack Rose was Batman.
Basically.
No.
So if I drink a Jack Rose, am I super beguiling now?
Yeah.
You'll lose all your hair.
I will pay that price.
Right.
So after hearing that full story, I mean, it can't possibly have been named, because the Jack Rose cocktail first appears in 1908.
Yeah.
The hit happens in, like...
1912. The trial...
Jack Rose wasn't jack shit until that trial happened, when all of this stuff happens. After the trial and everything, he went back to Connecticut because it was hard to be in New York at that point.
He went to be a farmer.
Oh, and do you know what else he was doing? He was doing the tour circuit, speaking in churches about his sin and about
turning that
around. He also was doing vaudeville. He had such a weird... He went on vaudeville.
Original con. Vaudeville,
and then he went, like... He was speaking in churches, but he was also doing... Some kind of weird, like, he was being filmed talking about the ills of gambling. They were, like, PSAs, basically.
Yeah.
For troops abroad. They're like, don't gamble, because you know what happens.
You lose all your hair?
You lose all your hair. there's all this murder shit. His con. And whatever.
I used to have beautiful hair.
And then he was like, don't gamble. Like, thumbs up. Like, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wow,
what a mastermind.
Really?
And the motivation is incredible. Because why not just keep paying? It's kind of a hassle. But in the end, everybody does it.
I kind of wonder if he just wanted to do it, I mean, it benefited everybody as well. But, you know, it's like, here's a golden opportunity.
Yeah.
And this is what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like once he got into the con, he's like looking for the next con. It's not about what the con is, but
he
pulled off the con.
He pulled off the best one.
Yeah.
The most brutal one.
How did we find out later through history that he was the guy?
Because he wrote about it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And here's the thing is, like, what's incredible to me is that Becker was nailed with just easily. There was none of, like, well, he's a cop, so there must be some other
thing. I kind of think that there was a bit of German stuff going on there.
I'm
guessing. It's total...
But do you also think...
Because right around that time, we see Germany doing stuff in Europe.
Yeah.
And people are starting to go, oh, Germans, the Hun, you know?
But also, think about how many people... The story you just told, everybody... There's not one fucking person that's not crooked in this shit. Whether they're turning a blind eye or they're totally involved in taking money.
Even Swope, to some extent. The reporter. He's hanging out with the brain.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in each other's weddings and shit. You know, like...
But, like,
Swope had good intentions, but, like, at the same time, how much shit was he doing in addition?
Right, but, I mean, if you're the chief of police in New York, and you're going, like... All right, yeah, I knew what was going on. I don't want this anywhere near me. Make it go away. That is an incredible
story. It sounds made up.
And not only was just the story amazing, not only was it something that should be made into a movie and shit, probably has been.
Yeah,
that,
I bet.
But even just the immersion into that world where there's all this crooked shit going on, like you were talking about, and all of the names and the way they lived, and, you know, oh yeah, I'm pimping my wife out, and it's not a big thing, clearly, because two people in the story.
It's how you make money.
Exactly. And on one side,
you're like, wow. What?
Jack
what?
Rose what? Used it, you know, he's teaming up with his wife. While she's doing that, he's out in the street running cons. He actually worked for Rosenthal, running his gambling tables for a while before he got enough money with his and his wife's combined earnings to go open up a place in the Tenderloin. So, like, yeah. Their operation seemed to work really well. They were working together. And as sick as that sounds,
do you know what I'll
he
bet?
Moved up.
Yeah.
So it can't, the cocktail can't possibly
it can't
be
named
this.
It. Cause it,
but afterwards, I bet people were like, yeah, give me a Jack Rose.
Yeah, pick up, yeah.
You know what's crazy about that is they weren't.
What?
They weren't. I was really hopeful. I was like, well, the Mafia Hitman, if it's a big story. Once I started looking into the story, I thought, clearly it's named after this guy. It's gotta be, right? But then I started finding all these news articles about how not only the cocktail, but the flower, people were changing the names. So you had bartenders and florists saying, ah, we can't call it the Jack Rose anymore.
That happen?
That happened right... Well... Kind of during the trial, while this is going on.
Oh, that's too edgy for us.
Right.
We need to, like, not name it after... Oh, really?
So they started calling it things like the Richmond Rose or the New York Rose.
Wow.
Or in terms
he
of...
He had no fucking hair.
Right.
It's creepy.
In terms of the flower, a lot of them were saying, the Rich. We're going to call it the Richmond Rose. But bartenders were like, we don't serve that.
Did Jack Rose's scheme actually make people want to change the name of flowers and drinks?
Isn't that weird, right? You think like...
Oh, we don't want anything to do with that.
Right? I mean, how bad was it? And in the story, when you actually think about it, you'd have to really be paying attention to what was going on. He paid for the car, in his own words. He got off scot-free, basically.
Yeah.
In his own words, I paid for the car and I paid for the hitman, but it was because of this other guy. He's not the worst. I mean, like, but because there's a cocktail, because there's a rose, and there was no, like, Becker cocktail as far as I know. So they probably were like, well, go after this guy. He's the next in line, right, of the worst people in the story.
Well, he's an honorless man.
Right.
He's a squealer.
That's the thing that I think... They kept saying, well, it's because, you know, it's because of Jack Rose and this whole Herman Rosenthal murder. And I'm like, it's not because of the murder. I have a feeling it's more to do with that he was a squealer. Yeah. And, like, no honor.
All us hypocrites want to believe, and we're not hypocrites.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, let's put the first two theories aside of why it's named the Jack Rose. As you said, it's not named after him. This drink comes about as early as 1905. I can't even verify that he was in New York at that time period. So if you say Cocktail Bill Boothby prints it in 1908, he got it from some dude who is a bartender in New York, presumably, in, you know, as early as 1905, according to David Wondridge. Jack Rose might have not have been there. And even if he was nobody. He was not, you know, he was in the underworld, so who knows who he is.
He was that hairless guy with the prostitute for a wife.
Right. If anybody even knew that.
What if he ordered that drink, like, a lot? I mean, he's the hairless dude. He's creepy.
That's the thing. Like, as much detail as Bill Boothby gives by putting down the address of the guy who gave
that's
it
true.
To
this hairless freak of a man.
Right. And he was like, okay, look. I get this recipe.
Who lives under a bridge?
By the way,
45-7.
Can you tell me where you live? While you're ordering a drink, fill out this card.
Right. But if, let's say this guy, R.H. Towns, is a bartender and he gives the drink to Boothby.
Yeah.
He's like, this drink's really good. You should put it, you know, in your recipe book. And he's like, look, I'm going to put down this guy's address because just in case you want to talk to this guy about the drink because it's really good. You think, like, with that much information, they might have mentioned, like, and by the way, it's named after this fool, you know, this weird bald guy.
Yeah, but check it out. R.H. Town, really hairless. Yeah? I think we solved it.
I don't think it's named after
him. Yeah, I don't think so either.
But, so, taking that out, I mean, it's just, it's really unlikely. It's, of course, it's always plausible.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he walked in and he was like, you know who I am? I'm Jack Rose, see?
You're gonna run
with
my
this
name.
Thing that's pink. You know, like, It's always plausible. I doubt it. But it is interesting that there was sort of a reaction to it.
Yeah.
I think that you have these bartenders that presumably start changing the name of their cocktails because they don't want to be associated with the Jack Rose story. But it also changed the name of the flower. And it's weird. Like, as you start going on in time, I think the two stories start to get conflated. Like, the idea that people change the name and then the idea that it was named after him. So it starts to become this very long telephone game. So I found an article from 1961. Yeah, October 8th, 1961. Where they're saying that the Jack Rose cocktail is named after Jack Rose because of this whatever. You know, like the whole big story you just told.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. You know, it probably wasn't. But the idea is, like, you know, if they're looking back in time and they're like, well, people changed the name because of this guy, clearly the drink was named after him in the first place, and that's why they changed the name. Why else would you change the name? But even so, when I started looking, I was like, this seems exaggerated. Like, there was a bunch of news stories about, like, people are changing the name! And then I was like, yeah, but it still shows them in recipe books between 1913 and 1916, and then all, basically from the time of the murder and, you know, all through Prohibition, people are still talking about Jack Rose cocktails. So I think it was like a sensational type of story that, like, yeah, this is really fucking crazy, and, you know, people are even changing the names of cocktails and the flowers, and maybe one or two people were. I'm guessing it was not like a huge, like, trend, widespread thing. I think it was just like it was a sensational news story.
Right.
You know, like,
on the
dog caught in the tree, right?
Bat boy found in basement.
You know, like, it probably happened, whatever. Yeah. But even so, the story itself, you almost wanted to be named after this dude.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you'd just be like, that's a crazy fucking story.
Yeah.
It should be named. It's like, my guess is, and I'm just prefaces with it, as much as I hate to agree with Haig, what he says is, I'm going to go with number one. I think it's named after the fact that it's rose color and it's got Applejack in it. And it's the lamest one. That
makes me feel dirty.
I feel like, even so, it's this. I think it's the simplest explanation. I think that the whole story surrounding it, you find it online. People are still saying, it was named after Jack Rose, who was a mafia hitman. Yeah, you're like, dude, you totally didn't. You don't know any part of the story.
Yeah.
You're saying something that's just been passed down. The telephone game again.
Yeah.
It is like the internet existed from 1912.
From a connection that wasn't there in the first place.
Right. Yeah. Right. But it's because, and I think most of the connection is the fact that people changed the name. Because I think if people didn't change the name,
we wouldn't even know. Yeah.
Nobody would even be talking about it. I mean, I don't think the name would have been associated with it. I think the fact that the newspapers at the time were like, oh, bartenders are changing the name of this cocktail. I think if nobody was doing that, we wouldn't even be having this conversation about a mafia hitman.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. And that was fun.
Fucking.
I feel like I just
So that's the movie. That's the Jack Rose story?
That's the Jack Rose
story. You gotta get in your car, see, and get to the bar. You gotta get to the drinking place.
That's right.
Everybody's crepe, see? Everybody's on the take, see?
You gotta wet our whistles, huh? Let's go do it.
Let's go talk to Mikey.
Yeah, you gotta get a nickname for him.
Yeah.
Mikey Two Balls.
Kevin the Big Tuna.
Okay, off to the Brixton.
The Jack Rose Cocktail. 1.5 ounces Applejack. Juice of 1/2 lime. 2 dashes grenadine. We'll be right back.
Okay, everyone, we are now back from the first part of the show where we talked about the Jack Rose, why it's named Jack Rose. And now we're here for the second part of the show where we are no longer in a bar. It's very sad. Do you notice that there's no chatter in the background? There's no clinking of silverware on plates. You can't hear the gentle swoosh of the taps. Yeah, the Brixton has closed.
Well, not to mention all of Lakeview is mourning the restaurant that is moving to the Brixton and leaving Lakeview. Like, I'm seeing all these friends from Lakeview who are like, no, we're losing our restaurants. And I'm going, no, it's replacing the Brixton.
Yeah, well, fuck them.
Sad for everyone.
They did it.
Well, Lakeview didn't.
Bastards.
Expel this restaurant.
Okay, I heard all the wait staff were actually prostitutes.
That's good for pubs. I mean, that's just traditional in pubs, right?
Would you like a hand job with your cocktail?
Why would you say no? I don't understand.
It's extra ingredients.
My friend who's a bartender says that in Illinois, you cannot both bartend and be a stripper at the same time. Because I guess there's like health concerns about that.
Must leave your clothes on to make drinks.
Yeah, no, but really though. Yeah. So you're making some jokes about how he could pull an extra money, and he's like, well, it'd have to be at a different bar.
Your tax dollars at work right there. Yep. Regulating strippers and their alcoholic
serving.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. You could not create the cocktails and also be naked.
Now they're going to tell me I can't do that at home, I bet. And that is...
Oh, yeah, I did not watch this cocktail get made. I should get nervous.
Okay, so we're here with Mr. Kevin Rotichek.
Hey, everybody.
And Rachel Rubin.
Hello.
And Eric Martin.
Good evening.
And Therese Sherman.
Hello.
And Lila Whitley.
Hi.
And Nicole Pizzini.
Hello.
Have any of you pulled a con that you totally got away with? Something that was just really excellent and devious?
Yeah, I wouldn't tell you if I had.
Why?
Because I don't want to get executed.
Statute of limitations is over. It's, you know.
You don't know.
It was only last week.
It's still going on.
Get long con.
Nobody's gotten away with anything.
I feel like I should have by now.
Yeah. I feel like you've told me stories, Kevin.
I just don't remember them.
We're either like all so bad that we're hiding things, or we're all just a bunch of goody two shoes.
Or we're just really bad at getting away with shit.
Or remembering the shit we got away with.
I think that's in my case, because there's probably lots of alcohol involved.
So we should talk to your friends.
Yes.
What did Kevin get away with?
Oh, right. There'll be something, I'm sure.
So you listened to the story about what happened. What did you think of his con?
I thought the most interesting part was actually his follow-up. He was like, well, took care of that. I think now I'll go preach the gospel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really... And he wrote the whole story afterwards, too.
Yeah. So he's like, well, now that criticizing booze instead of selling it is the thing, I guess I'll go do that.
Well, also, I mean, there was no way he could go back. He could not become a gambler or be part of the New York underworld. After squealing like that, he had to have known that when he was going to go do that, that part of his life was over. But I'm assuming that his character was so into getting away with it and pulling it off that he's like, I have to do that.
Did anyone else feel like it was very, like, if this guy were reincarnated, he'd be the Music Man? Ray knows what I'm talking about.
I love the Music Man.
So this is a pre-prohibition cocktail?
Yeah.
It does look beige.
I know. Well, they all do.
I know.
Me too.
They all look... But if you look at the book...
It's red in the book. I think it's because it uses that grenadine that's mostly red dye number something something.
Yeah.
Oh, whereas we've got like...
That's it.
The real stuff now.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. But it says two or more dashes of real pomegranate grenadine.
That's what's in there.
And real grenadine does not look like that.
No, it does not.
It smells like
and
lemon.
And that is also, yeah, like, I put a couple healthy dashes in there because otherwise there's not much to this cocktail.
Yeah,
it all... That picture has more than 2 dashes in it for
two
sure.
2 ounces of grenadine.
Yeah, that means...
I think what they've done is they've added citrus. The blood of their enemies.
Yeah.
That would probably still be brown once it oxidizes.
I knew that was going to be that. I could taste it in my tongue before I tasted it. Just
it smells kind of like tea. Like lemony tea.
Yeah.
It does. It smells like an Arnold lemony. Palmer.
I once smelled an Arnold Palmer, and he didn't smell that great.
Smelled like golf
there
socks.
There it is. Once you get past the lemon, like, you get to...
This is a really citrusy one.
It's really coming
here. Yeah, it is.
One drink. You have half a drink. One drink is 1.5 ounces of Applejack and 1 ounce of lemon juice.
Wow. Yeah, that's like half... Lemon juice. Yeah. That's
And the acidity isn't really cutting the burn of the Applejack either. No. It's just sort of like sour and burning.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that burning is what gets you to wanting to kill your enemies.
Like, oh,
that's
yeah.
That's the connection. I feel motivated.
Do you get any apple?
No, not yet.
Any what?
Apple. Do you get apple when you drink Applejack?
I only ever get burning when I drink Applejack.
Yeah, burning a
just
little,
burning.
A little, like, a little hint of the mustiness that comes from...
Yeah, burning grandma. As opposed to brandy, which is just grandma.
This is apple. This is like citrus and then burn and then grandma.
Yeah.
Citrus and burning grandma.
What on grandma? Like, yeah.
Rachel has coined that term for us.
Yeah.
What is grandma?
Grandma is... It's a little bit musty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit floral. That's mainly it.
It's like the attic.
So the
it's,
second taste you taste would be the
yeah.
grandma.
Yeah. Grandma's rarely the first thing you get, but often a little aftertaste.
This drink licks its lips before it kisses you.
It's very lemony.
Yeah.
I feel like Jack Rose is
like lemon juice. It's really, but that's really... 2 dashes of grenadine like, doesn't do
well anything.
It's just to make the color.
Now that we've tried the purest version, can I go grab the grenadine and we can sweeten it up? Make
sure.
It pink? See
yeah.
how it goes?
Sure.
We're out of lemons, but yeah.
Maybe once
well,
it looks that color, it'll be delicious. Maybe once it matches the color in the book, it'll be tasty.
I used to eat lemons as a kid, and I haven't like had like a pure lemon in a long time, but like... If I'm just gonna go on a train of thought of like me sipping this thing, I'm like, oh, it tastes like my childhood, actually. But I would just like
she was very
eat lemons.
I can't even taste the alcohol. Really, like the first.
I don't either. I taste.
Let me see. I'll let
this,
you know.
This recipe really could have benefited from women's suffrage.
Yeah.
Everything does.
Are you the comedic relief of the podcast?
Everyone's comedic relief.
Yeah.
I feel like, but like you have a particular role with your one-liners so far.
Well, no one can see how funny looking I am, so I have to make up for it.
He's lying. He's very.
We're
attractive.
Gonna post that unicorn head. And then
Ooh.
That should be my cast shot. It's just the unicorn head.
Let's see which one should it be? Should it be your amount of grenadine or Leela's?
Even well, mine does not save it. It is still a soury punch in the face.
So just mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
And it actually has
oh,
color.
Nope, not mine bounced it out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so a capful.
Oh, there it's different.
Oh, good. Better different?
Yeah, it's counteracting the lemon.
Do you want some of the
to like compare here? I only put a capful in, so I'm not sure if like that's enough, but it seems like it's cut through.
Ooh.
Oh, woo! All right, look at yours.
No one's ever allowed to let me pour things. It's not good.
That's even kind of layered.
If we traveled back in time and started handing out limeritas, we'd be just like rich
people.
Yeah.
No, but people were like eating sugar, just like putting in their teeth and letting their teeth melt. Like that was what they were doing.
Really?
They weren't anti-sugar.
Wasn't that opium?
I mean, yeah, but like not the children, not yet. Like you first, like they do it in asthma.
Why not the children?
You know, we're just not fair.
When did refined sugar, refined sugar become a thing?
But anytime there was sugar, they
ate it.
They loved it.
I did that with grass.
Would the American Revolution have happened if Britain had sent over Bud Light Limeritas instead of tea? It probably would not have thrown that stuff overboard.
No.
I would.
And
they
they would have somehow killed the Native Americans with it. Like that's how that would have happened.
Yeah. Shot it out of their cannons.
It would have been something.
Bud Light Limeritas?
Cans.
No, they had rum. And they were drinking it by the pint when they woke up in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
They were like...
You can't drink the water. What else are you going to drink?
Yeah. It's true.
What did you say that was for to clear your brain?
That was the fog cutter.
The fog cutter.
That was what they that's what they called it. It was a fog cutter. You get up in the morning and you drink a pint of rum to start your day.
Actually, so what was that thing that was on Netflix? It's with the guy who used to be in who starred in Dirty Jobs, but he was talking about the American Revolution
Mike
of beer.
Rowe?
Yeah, Netflix. Mike Rowe. It's on Netflix, but it talks about beer and pubs and the American Revolution.
There was a Ken Burns documentary.
Yeah, Paul Revere, like the entire sort of route that Paul Revere did, it was like from pub to pub to pub, and that's where a lot of founding fathers got together originally.
Yeah.
That's where the muskets were kept. So Lexington, Concord, they've been sitting there for a few hours and had a few drinks.
Oh, boy.
So maybe the Lima Ritas, if they had sent them over, we wouldn't have had a revolution because they would have quelled the natives, or it would have taken a much more...
They wouldn't have gone to the pubs. They'd just be...
No, actually...
Or they would have been there, different terms.
There were very few battles fought where people weren't wasted. Like, back then...
And how do you really close
the reason,
to people?
The reason they threw the tea in the harbor was because the only place they could get tea from was Britain, and Britain was taxing it. So if the only place you could get a Limerita from was Britain, and they were taxing it, you'd probably still revolution...
Yeah.
Revolutionize
salutary neglect is a real thing.
But this cocktail is from... 150 years later.
Yeah.
Well, 130 years.
When later. People were so drinking all day.
Kind of. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. So. I mean, that's what sort of enacted prohibition.
Yeah. There's a level where I kind of look at, after having read a lot of what was going on and the behavior and stuff, I'm just kind of like, yeah, they needed to stop for a while. It was, like, out of control.
Prohibition is like your Sunday morning when you're like, maybe I won't drink for the next 12 hours.
And it was, there was an entirely different spirit to the way people were drinking at that time versus when they were getting up in the colonial era and drinking a pint of rum. It was different. There was a different motivation. People were literally trying to escape their lives in the 1900s.
Plus, there was more fear of foreign people who drank.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
How has consumption of alcohol changed in terms of quantity and strength over the last 200 years in America?
We drink a lot less now.
Yeah.
Than before Prohibition, yeah.
But our behaviorally, I feel like we have more problems. Or is that just because we can get into more trouble?
I think people just point them out as problems now.
Because and also it's a lot easier to report the problems than it was then.
Yeah, and there's more visibility, and you know, you can track people more, and our lives are just generally better. There was a red light district in Chicago, the Levy District, where you could get all kinds of horrible things that you wanted. I mean, there were all different kinds of drugs. You could buy someone to torture. People would disappear.
Did you want to preface this with a time period?
This was last week.
Yeah. I was like, where do you get the torture?
It was.
Devil in the White City?
Yeah, that's
Devil
like Holmes.
What?
It was this Devil in the White City?
Time period? Like 1893?
It was during, the World's Fair. That's when the Levy District started, but people enjoyed it so much it just kept going on.
You gotta keep it going.
But every major town had a bar that was known as the Bucket of Blood. And it got its name because at the end of the night,
after you mopped the floor,
the bucket was red and full of blood because of all the fights and knifings and other things that happened. So there were places in every major metropolitan area of the United States, even smaller areas like, you know, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and then certainly every city where the violence was just out of control and people were taking advantage of each other in ridiculous ways and in ways that really couldn't be stopped. There was no, you didn't have the communication that we have now. You didn't have the law enforcement capability. You know, people could disappear and no one would know.
Which is how H.H. Holmes sort of got his start, being a devil in the White City.
Yeah.
I think we've all
done that. Yeah. Well, since moving back to Chicago, I've suggested to everybody who's similarly moving into Chicago, and I was like, I need to reread that just because it's such a good, it sets up a lot of what Chicago is good at and what Chicago's bad at.
Got it, clearing dead horses out of the street.
Good at architecture, bad at law and order.
Actually, good at clearing dead horses out of the street because we have alleys.
We do.
New York.
God.
Oh, God bless the alleys.
Boston sucks.
Right? Everywhere on the East Coast. They just did, I mean, they didn't burn down as many times, I guess, where they had to, like, rebuild with a plan. So, I love my alley.
I mean, it's a problem we could fix right now. Let's drive out there and light some
stuff
on fire.
Let's burn down New York City.
Let's kill some horses and see how they're cleared away.
Wow. I'm so glad this entire conversation is being recorded.
It's been worse.
Yeah.
No one has said anything racist yet, so that's nice.
And we haven't talked about genitals yet either.
No. Well, we're working our way out.
Did,
in minutes of this thing. We're down.
You know, we need to increase our explicit rating. Did you notice what Jack Rose and Herman Rosenthal did with their wives? It was insane. They both prostituted their wives.
That's called pimping.
Yes.
Prostituted?
Yeah. I
feel like that can be a verb.
Yeah. They both.
Pimping is something you have to earn.
Right.
And he
didn't have the cane or the hat.
Yeah, he didn't. He did not have the style. Neither of them had the style. Well, maybe Bald Jack Rose did. This is the only story where that has happened
that
in our show.
How much agency those wives had?
Yeah, I'm wondering why they.
Well, here's the thing. Is that in the story that I read, it was a pretty good arrangement for Jack Rose.
I'm not asking about Jack Rose.
No, for both of them.
This is Jack Rose.
For both of them. They were working together, and they stayed together in the long term. So he provided protection in the evenings, but then during the day he'd be out grifting and getting jobs and doing things. And they pooled their money. And
it was a pimp with a profit-sharing scheme.
It was a matter of, like, figuring out what was going to work best for their situation.
And I guess I'm just coming from a perspective where I hope that was the case. I hope it was a matter of the two of them sitting down and being like, okay, let's plan this out. And less like a, hey, bitch, hit the street.
See, I get the sense that the former is more the case because she stayed with him and did not leave. And she apparently was not dumb and was fairly powerful and well-respected. In
yeah,
the community?
That doesn't mean she had agency, though. If the
yeah.
law wasn't on her side, she may not have been able to divorce him.
Well,
she may not have been able to.
Rosenthal's wife
or
did leave him.
Super villainess, and she's badass.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm hoping she had agency, and she was like, yeah, man, let's do this. Let's get that money. And not like, aw, again?
That's kind of what I... The way I interpreted reading the story... Yeah.
That's like the happy side of the story.
Was that there was more of that going on in their relationship as opposed to Rosenthal, his wife eventually ended up leaving him.
You know, it's like a good way of saying, like, how much did she get paid? Because if you're high class, she was probably, like, getting it. And if it was, like, 10 cents, it was not a good deal.
Well, either way, if it was all going to him, I don't know.
Well, but, see, that's the thing is I don't think that it was like that.
But together they were like, let's make this hustle. That's
I think
cool.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
An independent, like, sort of powerful sort of woman with a society and whatnot and still be totally gaslit in your relationship, though. Because that, I mean, that's another reason. So, I mean, it could go either way. I haven't read the, like, source materials, but, yeah.
There probably is.
I mean, I wasn't there either.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm just assuming a lot based on what I read, but.
Yeah. I like the story if there are cohorts in crime. I don't like the story if it's.
Like I said, that's the sense that I got. And reading other things about the relationship that they had as a couple with other couples, like when they would encounter the Rosenthals at a party or when, you know, they would encounter the Beckers at a party, because all these people hung out and everybody had a nickname.
I love the nickname thing.
Dago Frank. Boob Walker.
Now that's a question. That's your starting out question is, what's your crazy gangster nickname?
I don't know. I don't think you can pick it.
Yeah, someone else has to pick it. I think.
Mine's been picked.
I'm Wheels, actually. So it was, went from Leela to Leels, and then I had this roommate who's great at nicknames, and then it was Wheels. It was my roommates who gave me this, because I was the one who had the Zip Car membership, so I was literally the one driving everybody around to IKEA.
That's so gangster. That is
well,
the Zip Car
to IKEA, but the thing that really solidified it was we all had internships at the same publishing company, and I had the mail cart once.
There you go.
I was just like riding the mail cart, and they're like, "You truly are Wheels," and I was like, "I am." So, what about you?
Me?
Taz, Tasmanian Devil?
Tasmanian. I don't know.
I don't. My gangster nickname was something Russian prostitute. Something. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Trace has been mistaken for a Russian prostitute many years.
Yeah. Big part of my life. Not gonna explain it. We're just gonna move on. Mistaken. We'll add that.
You're not actually from Russia?
There is a Rachel Rubin. A Turkey Rubin is called a Rachel. This is actually a real thing.
Lisa just got the joke. She just got it.
I'm right with you guys. What is this?
So this is just Applejack.
Yeah.
This is freeze distilled apple cider.
Are we gonna try? We should try and make this on the porch.
Like in the awesome.
This tastes a little bit like bourbon.
No one made a joke the entire time about Titanic.
I know. As soon as I said
Titanic,
and also no fingering jokes.
I was
really
like making headlines in 1912 is hard.
That's wow. Really, I mean, like,
also
fine.
Jack and Rose.
I know, that's the only thing I could think of when I saw the name of it. It was just like, this is the Titanic movie cocktail.
I've never sat through the movie.
And it's made of frozen things. Like, there's all kinds of levels.
Yeah. When we're done with this, we can pry its dead fingers off of a door and shove it out into the sea.
I'll never let you go. Get off.
Hey, why won't you sink?
Bye, bitch.
The only thing better if, like, his fingers had stayed. She was just chopping at it.
Well, then she would have had a snack for later.
You know, protein is important on the ocean.
You don't know when you're going to get picked up.
And you know it's fresh.
It's
burning. Sushi.
No jokes out there.
Yeah. Better than genitals. Cannibalism.
It's not like it's something she hasn't tasted before.
Oh, you guys, wait! Finger looking good!
Oh.
Whenever I think about Titanic and alcohol, I think about...
How often do you think about Titanic and alcohol?
Quite often, because there's a character whom I called Aunt Beth in my 20s. And Aunt Beth was a 40-year-old woman who looked more like 56. And she would show up every Friday night to the same house party that I would go to and drink with all the young 20-year-olds, and she had this tacky, huge costume jewelry necklace that she called the Heart of the Ocean. And you knew that the night was over when Aunt Beth got too drunk to stand and she would lose the Heart of the Ocean and start looking for it. And that's when you knew it was time to go.
Oh, did you remind her that she had thrown it overboard ages ago?
Well, if you tried to make that joke, she didn't get it because she was way too far gone to speak English. But that's what it makes me think of.
This is a whole different podcast that we need just dedicated to, like, the backstory of Aunt Beth. Mm. How would she get invited to these house parties?
Does she have agency?
She was
How could she lose this necklace?
And I don't think that it was a joke. She was an odd lady. Is an odd lady. I have no idea if she's still alive.
If you're listening.
I don't know how she could be.
Get into it.
She was only 40, so.
She
did. Yeah, Kevin's only 40.
She
drinking
drank
hard living,
a lot.
Man.
Drinking
drank
that
a
much.
Lot.
Well, I see my future.
And drove. But she was in Oklahoma, so.
It's not like you're even going to run into a tree in Oklahoma. You're home explain. Free.
I was going to make the joke of being in the podcast. I didn't know if we could do this, but the. He was a con man, and then he became a preacher. Come on.
Right?
That's like moving up in the con game.
I thought that was
You said it was weird. I'm like, I think that's actually perfect. Of course he became a preacher.
And she's
yeah.
a religious one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, and it was totally during, like, the re-enlightenment. It, like, he played just right into whatever.
1912
was
quite the...
No.
It's not one of the Great Awakenings.
The Great Awakening... Second Great Awakening was, like, mid-19th century.
Yeah. Second Great Awakening was in the 1820s. I wrote my AP U.S. History DBQ question on it.
Yeah.
What
there was the
religious?
Spiritual
what?
What type of religious?
Protestant.
He moved to upstate New York and changed his name to Joseph Smith.
Well, the Methodists,
also we're
specifically my denomination, so the Methodists, like, 10 years later, were one of the major people behind Prohibition. Mm-hmm. And to this day, if you go to a Methodist church, this is interesting.
It's delicious, though.
Yeah, right? So for communion, you go out there and you get the bread and the wine, but it's not wine, it's grape juice.
It's so delicious.
And I thought that was normal. And then
like
I went to a Lutheran church and I took communion and I was like, what is this bullshit?
Yeah.
And I was like, 8 and I did not school my face, and my mom about died of mortification.
Not laughter?
And Mormons. Someone else was laughing because it was like a friend of the family's like daughter getting christening or something like that. But my mom was like, "Oh, Leela, your face," which is not an uncommon like thing she uttered when I was a kid.
Ew, Jesus tastes gross.
But Lutherans don't practice open tables, so technically you shouldn't have been able to do that. Methodists are the only ones that practice open tables.
What's an open table?
So like anybody can take communion.
You don't have to be confirmed.
Because my aunt was Lutheran and I wasn't allowed to take communion when I was a kid. And I was like, yeah. Oh, well, I'm going to hell. Thank you.
Well, I was Lutheran. I was baptized within like the it's like the Holy Catholic Church, which is basically when we say the Protestant things, it's not the actual Catholic Church. It's like all the Christian denominations.
Yeah, they didn't count for me. I was not this too. Lutherans shunned me.
When I was traveling in Austria with a group of older Methodists, they definitely illegally smuggled a ton of wine back into the country, so...
Oh, I didn't say we followed it now. I said back in the day we were dicks.
Customs, if you're listening, this didn't happen.
My mother, as a Methodist, smuggled... Wow, Methodist and smuggling is apparently a theme.
They know your last name. Shh.
I know, right?
Oh, yeah, we were introduced with our full names now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's true. My mom, well, this was one of her maiden names, but she smuggled Bibles into the Soviet Union as part of a people.
My grandparents did that too. Hey! I did that.
Bible smugglers.
They did it in Turkey too.
I did not do that. Interesting. My mom went through Checkpoint Charlie in Berlin in 1969 and got Bibles into the Soviet Union.
That's my granddaughter.
Well, this is why you're a Russian prostitute.
Yeah, there it is.
This is the Bible, that's why.
I'm sure she could have gotten more for something else.
No, it's true.
I think we're going to wrap this up.
Well, we hit all our major topics.
Yeah.
Yeah, we covered everything. Every damn thing.
We didn't make the fingering joke.
Say what?
We didn't make the fingering joke.
We should make it now and then he can edit it in somewhere. Slice it.
No one
that's
can
a finger looking good. I thought that was... That's a good
no
fingering
No one can do
joke.
A finger joke the way Animaniacs can.
That's true.
With fingerprints.
Yeah, that was good. That's the best.
That's the best fingering joke.
Oh,
it can't be done better than that. Yeah, Dot was holding prints and he smiled at her.
Oh, yeah! That's not the correct answer, though.
And she said, I don't think so. Well, she is, like, 8.
Yeah, she's supposed to be a child.
Oh. Yeah. The Hello Nurse thing is now creepier.
Keep on thinking and drinking, y'all. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I would like to thank Jason Cruz and Nick Lehman for unraveling the history in the front part of the show, the regular tasting team Kevin Rtajczyk, Rachel Rubin, Nicole Pizzini, and Eric Martin for joining me in the grueling task of sampling each cocktail we discuss, and a special thanks to the skilled bartenders at Ward 8 in Evanston, Illinois for taming the cocktail monsters we enjoy. I would also like to thank Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic, and give us an awesome rating and tell us what you think while you're at it. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, come blacken your liver with us. Yeah.